You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's in-depth series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Thursday, January 7th. Today, we're going to be continuing on with our series of lessons learned or opportunities presented by the pandemic. We've already had two programs on that subject, and we're really pleased to be joined today by three folks from over in neighboring Windham County. Joining us today are in our virtual Zoom room are Sarah Lang, who is the project manager of the Southern Vermont Economy Project. Chris Campany is the executive director of the Windham Regional Commission, and Adam Grenold is the executive director of the Brattleboro Development Credit Corporation. Folks, great to have you with us today. Thank you for making the time for this. And well, let's get right to it. Let's go around the room. And Adam, I guess I'll start with you. What do you see from your standpoint as what are the major lessons learned from the pandemic and where do we go from here?
Well, thanks for putting this together today. I think there's a lot of ways we could approach that question, both from an economic development lens, but also personally. So I think, one is patience. The second is that you can make plans and you need to be able to adapt to those plans that have been made, and that you really want to try to position yourself to be flexible. So, patience, resiliency, and flexibility. And, that's both personal lessons as well as lessons to apply in our work. For the regional economy and the municipalities that we serve and the businesses that we serve, we've really seen folks have to really dig deep into all those and ensure that they are able to live another day, fight another day for their business and their employees, and then having to reinvent how everything is done on the fly has been a real challenge. And those that have been able to do that successfully are thriving. Some businesses are not thriving to no fault of their own. It's not as if they didn't show resiliency and try to pivot away from the current conditions. And some businesses are just in a position that simply is the headwinds are too strong. We've got a lot of hospitality folks in the valley that are really continuing to struggle. But I think we've seen the community locally, regionally, and statewide really rally around those businesses that just simply can't work their way through this in the short term. So, those are just a couple of thoughts that I've had coming into today's conversation.
All right. And Chris, what have been your takeaways?
I would agree with everything Adam just said and add, I think we saw that when it comes to some of our, the governor talks about, helping those most at risk. And I think one of the things that we realized was that when it comes to feeding everyone who needs to be fed and housing everybody who needs to be housed, meaning those currently without housing, Vermont did that. And so I think it's a matter more, I think we showed it's a matter more of will and policy than anything else, that we can address these issues when we really need to. And when we really want to. I think also, with regard to, continuity of operation of governments, I think we learned a lot that can transfer over about how we could use remote means of getting together to supplement in-person means of getting together when we're able to do that to create more robust public engagement, making it possible for more people to participate than not. But that also underscores how access to high-speed broadband and, frankly, cell phone service has got to be more of a top priority than what it is. I know we've talked a lot about it. There have been gains made during this period to improve access for all Vermonters. But, you know, especially working with our federal delegation and others, it really has to be, you know, as ubiquitous as electricity. We really need to put more of a focus on actually making it happen and as quickly as possible. You know, beyond the pandemic, this is just a fundamental communications issue for everyone, especially, you know, for school children, beyond the pandemic, for the opportunities with telemedicine beyond the pandemic. It's something that any community needs, but I would say especially in a rural community like Vermont.
And Sarah, what have been your thoughts on the subject as we've labored our way through the pandemic here? Hopefully we're a lot closer to the end of it than we are to the beginning.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Chris definitely touched on a point that I have been thinking a lot about, which is sort of our municipal efficiency, I guess, would be how I would describe it. I think we all get very comfortable in just doing the things the way we've always been doing them. And I think the pandemic was a great opportunity for municipalities to see that there are different ways of doing things, like select board meetings, and how that those opportunities and those options can really increase the public engagement, like Chris said. My program hosts trainings and workshops across Southern Vermont. And one of our biggest issues pre-pandemic was just getting people to come. When you have a 4-hour workshop, but you know it's an hour away because that's where we happen to be holding it at that time, you know, that's basically a full day where, you know, with holding it online, you don't even have to leave your house. And obviously there's the issues of broadband, which, you know, Chris touched on, and, you know, it will continue to be a conversation, but I think in certain ways, it's definitely made more opportunities for growth for our municipalities and also for programs like mine that hold these workshops and trainings. Another municipal example, the town of Vernon town clerk had posted something about how the pandemic brought upon the opportunity to put their land records, make them digital or virtual. And, you know, that potentially wouldn't have happened without the pandemic to really, you know, make those accessible because people weren't able to be in person. So there's a ton of silver linings. And I think the biggest one, at least for me personally, is just, the recognition of the gratitude of living in a state like Vermont, living in a state that, you know, recognizes science and, you know, didn't really politicize mask wearing. And because of that, you know, we have the best situation out of any of the states. And I think just, you know, feeling grateful for living in a state like we do.
Well, let me drill down a little bit, or invite you all to drill down a little bit into a couple of these areas. I think you all, in one way or another, touched on the broadband question. That's been one I've been thinking a lot about in the two programs on lessons learned that preceded this one. Everyone I talked to always mentioned broadband as a big issue, but I find myself wondering, okay, we all agree that the state needs to really build up a far more robust broadband network. And Chris, like you said, the parallel with the electrification programs of the 1930s has also often been drawn. But as I understand it, if we were to kind of get to a place in the broadband world that we would like to be at in Vermont, that's about a $300 or $400 million issue if we're going to string wire up the final miles of dirt roads up mountainsides and whatnot and connect all the folks who are currently underserved. At the same time, there also seems to be a bit of a tension going on between the short-term need for folks who are so underserved to fix that with things like Wi-Fi hotspots, but that's not going to be a long-term solution, at least as it seems to me and as others have told me. I guess I'd just like to invite you all to comment on How are we going to actually make this happen? Is it just a question of trying to get federal dollars freed up to kind of finance this sort of development, or is it a question of leaning on private sector providers like Comcast or Consolidated Communications to build those final mile fiber to the home capacities, or what's the next step that needs to happen here? And Adam, I guess I'll pick on you first again.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. I think in the end, the solution will require federal assistance. There's just no doubt about it. There is not enough dollars in the state of Vermont to address this without those resources. We do see, though, very creative and innovative Vermont ways in which to begin to lay the foundation so that this work can go forward. So with the great work of the CUDs across the region, in the Windham region, we're really seeing a real strong effort, and they've made amazing headway and will continue to do so. I think with the recent changes in the federal outlook, I'm optimistic that we're going to be seeing a significant opportunity for federal dollars to support broadband in the coming perhaps year. I think we do need those resources. I think Vermont is organized and ready to receive those resources and has taken advantage of perhaps too long of a planning period to do so.
Okay. Anyone else like to weigh in on that, or have we basically covered broadband as best as we can at this point?
I'll just offer, in addition to the funding, I think there's also just from a federal, not state, but federal regulatory standpoint, because it's from there that the state has its authorizations. I think maybe post-pandemic, and frankly, the change in just the political environment nationally, is a really good time for Vermont, along with other rural states and ex-urban states, to have a more robust conversation about the role of broadband in lives and livelihoods, and what is the proper regulatory regime around broadband. Should it be regulated more as a public utility like phone and electricity and even cable? Then also, just as a nation, frankly, is this one of those pieces of infrastructure where we need to have more, share more through our tax dollars in the public investment in this key piece of infrastructure, just like we used to do with electricity, with water, with sewer, and other things where we recognize as a fundamental public good, from which we all benefit, as opposed to kind of more of a Darwinian approach of, whoever's got is best positioned to get the resources are going to get them, and those who don't are going to ultimately languish. And, that has big implications for a rural state like Vermont, but in other rural states. But the other piece of this, too, and tying it to, the new folk who have moved to Vermont, I think this is also an opportunity to try to tap into those new resources, the new people who are here, who perhaps might even have more resources to invest in, like the CUDs and implementation of broadband. Maybe there's additional capital that could be invested. And I'm thinking about the early investment model that like EC Fiber had, where before they got started, they actually reached out to locals to make, whether it's either donations or investments into setting up that local high-speed fiber system. And there, we may have some opportunities there.
Sarah, I wanted to ask you to build on a point you were making there a moment ago. You mentioned having meetings of folks together remotely via Zoom. And of course, it seems to me, just in passing, that the whole remote working aspect of this is another fascinating element that it will be interesting to see if that survives the pandemic or goes on, because we've all had experiences of one sort or another about this. But you and the Brattleboro Development Credit Corporation and Windham Regional Commission and the Bennington County Regional Commission will be hosting an economic conference in May. May 12th to 14th. I promised myself I would mention that so that we could help publicize that a little bit. So it seems like, you know, in the past you had those at Mount Snow or Stratton or some of the ski areas. And this year, May 12th to the 14th is going to be a 3-day remote conference, which will be kind of different. I guess I just wondered, what are your thoughts on doing an event like that remotely, as opposed to the in-person kind of experience that we've had before?
Yeah, I mean, I think nothing beats in person, especially when it comes to conferences. You know, there's nothing like that sound of sort of the buzz after, you know, a certain session or a keynote speaker, when people are up sort of mingling and networking. And unfortunately, that's really hard to recreate in a virtual platform. But I think we really didn't want to go another year without having the summit. We really see the summit as sort of a place for people who are involved in the economy or care about the economy, a place for them to get together and either learn new things or discuss current topics. And we just didn't feel right putting it off for another year until we could be in person. And so, you know, I've attended a few virtual conferences over the past several months. And yeah, I mean, they're not ideal. They're really not. But, you know, I think we're going to have, you know, a program of some really interesting topics and sessions. And the hope is, you know, that you will want to attend all of them. But the benefit of doing it virtually and over a couple of days is you can just choose the sessions that you want to come to and not sort of be stuck in the building for the rest of the day, you know. So again, it's sort of this give and take of, well, you're not there in person, so you can't really mingle, but then also you can really pick and choose the sessions you want to attend. So I'm really excited and looking forward to it. There will be a learning curve, even though we have spent, you know, 10 months on Zoom. It's a little different doing it in a conference setting, but yeah, we're open to suggestions. If anyone, you know, has any ideas of how to make it feel more personal and networky. But we're going to try our hardest to keep that aspect of it.
If I can jump in on that, you know, one of the things I think that we've struggled with in the past is we've been intentional about bringing outside voices in, as well as highlighting the great work of the partners that are already doing this work within the region. And it's the sharing of best practices. And, you know, the remote nature of this will allow us to bring resources that can be in California are just as close now as the resource that's in Dover through the Zoom platform. So it's actually allowing us to cast our net a little further afar than we have in the past in thinking about who we can have attending. So it's going to be, you know, an advantage in that sense.
Okay. I just wanted to ask you all if what you thought of the pandemic and the lessons learned out of that and the economic impact might impact the environmental or green revolution area. I mean, there's been last year the legislature passed that Global Warming Solutions Act bill, which I know isn't going to actually do anything immediately, but set some fairly ambitious goals for the state. Do you think the pandemic in a kind of unexpected way opens the door to kind of making more headway on that and also maybe creates job opportunities for Vermonters? Solar installations is one that comes quickly to mind, but I'm sure there are many others. I guess I'd just be curious to know, because one of the people I spoke to on one of the earlier shows talked at great length about, the possibility that this would be kind of a crisis too good to waste in terms of trying to actually get moving on some of the environmental climate change questions. So I guess I just wondered what you all thought about that. And then Chris, maybe I'll pick on you first on this one, if I may.
Well, and full disclosure, I'm a member of the newly formed Vermont Climate Council. And so we've begun our meetings. I think one of we've all been home so much more. It's going to be interesting to see what that means for kind of the switch from consuming energy, driving back and forth to places versus consuming energy at home. I know our utility bills went up because we were home running the heat. We were home running the electricity. And so that might actually spur. And then also we recently moved homes. And that was related to the change in the real estate market. But, you know, one of the things I realized being in the house was, especially our older house, was how cold it could be. So it might encourage more investments in efficiency or, you know, at least inquiries into like home energy audits, that kind of thing. I suspect that remote work, if not every day, maybe more, you know, go into work a few days, work from home a few days. I suspect that will continue, and it'll be interesting to see to what extent that also ties in with other things like childcare, and just more flexibility to allow people to work from home because of whatever their family or home situation could be. Because, you know, one of the things with an aging population, we also need to think about adult daycare. And so I know that's not exactly energy, but there are just a lot, you know, all these things interrelate. It's not just right, just, not everything is siloed. But also the fact that it looked, we may have recruited, and again, I think the jury is out on how many people are going to stay, how many people might continue to move here based on what they've learned about Vermont nationally, because we've been in the spotlight a lot. But, you know, we have people who've moved here who obviously probably brought their jobs with them. And so to what extent is that going to continue, and to what extent will that actually be a model for maybe people who didn't make this transition already, or businesses make that transition already, continue that for the longer haul? To the extent that we have greater demand, that might actually spur greater investment in our remote work infrastructure. Because one of our biggest energy greenhouse gas emitting sectors and energy consumptive sectors is transportation, the miles we have to drive here. So it's going to be, those are some of the things that come immediately to mind. I know as a regional commission, we're involved in a review of Section 248 renewable energy applications. And we've seen a flurry of solar applications because the incentives that the state's providing are about to be reduced yet again. So, which is an indicator to me that while solar development is cheaper, it is still somewhat dependent upon favorable terms. And so that doesn't necessarily relate to the pandemic, but it's one of the things we'll need to keep in mind about where is that sweet spot for solar, especially as far as like developers developing it on their own accord, and what level of subsidy needs to continue to exist to encourage its further development.
We have a couple of minutes left, and I just wanted to ask you all what you thought might be some of the lessons learned for some of the industries that have been fairly hard hit here in Vermont by the pandemic. And I'm thinking in particular of retail and the hospitality industries. I mean, when the vaccines are distributed and things go back to quote unquote normal, whatever that was, I mean, is it just a case of, well, okay, good. Hospitality industries like restaurants and hotels and retail outlets are going to just sort of go back to being like it was in December of 2019? Or are there some lasting impacts that we've seen that are just going to keep on going? And Adam, I guess I'll go back to you, and we'll go across the top of the screen here.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think by now everyone has abandoned the notion that we're going to return to normal, that we have moved beyond that. So what will become normal in the future? And, you know, I think Vermont has proven itself attractive and resilient as a state, as a destination. I believe people will continue to travel. I believe people will continue to want to gather and break bread. You know, I believe that people will, when here, will want to take a piece of Vermont back with them where they go. So the fundamentals for hospitality, tourism, travel, retail will continue to exist. How will that look? You know, we are already in transition with brick and mortar in retail. So there's more forces against the retail piece, I feel, than this just general tourism. So I think, you know, our hospitality sector is really going to, this is going to be a long, hard winter. We've seen nationally far greater increase or a greater percentage of restaurant closures than we've seen here in Vermont. I think the Vermont business has been able to have less debt, been less exposed, perhaps be able to operate a little more lean than some of national trends. So those small hospitality restaurants and retail operators in Vermont who make it through this winter will be in a position to be able to forge the way for that new future. And I am optimistic that there will be people coming to Vermont continuing to want to be here and fueling that opportunity.
All right. And Chris, back to you. Any thoughts on the retail, hospitality, and other industries here in Vermont?
Just one thing I would note, there may be an opportunity to tap into a more diverse customer base. Just anecdotally, as we're seeing the reckoning with, systemic racism in the United States and increased awareness around that. You know, in Vermont, we saw that awareness increase too. We also saw backlash against it, which I think is equally important because we need to get is a recognition that we have problems here too. But I think for our businesses, if we as a community approach being more intentionally inclusive and understanding what the issues are, how to be more inclusive and more inviting, I think we may have exposed ourselves to just greater awareness and greater understanding about that Vermont exists and what opportunities exist here for recreation and especially recreation and other activities. And just anecdotally, I'll note that when I was out and about this summer, I thought I saw more people and families of color on the streets of Brattleboro and other and out on the rivers and other places, which I found to be very heartening. So I think there might be some new opportunities there, but it's going to require work and challenging some assumptions, assumptions, especially grounded in privilege, to really take advantage of that.
And Sarah, you get the last word in this discussion here on this part.
Oh boy, I think just to add what to Adam was talking about, for those retail businesses that, did not have to close, I think a lot of them realized the different opportunities that were out there that maybe they weren't thinking of or haven't explored yet. I mean, similar to what I was saying about the towns, it's like we all just get really comfortable in doing what we've been doing. And being sort of pushed out of our comfort zone, I think there have been some retailers, in our area that have really utilized online shopping. And, anecdotally, I know of one business that like were almost strictly, in their little shop and also in, other grocery stores. And they've been just slammed because they really worked on their online store. And, now their product is shipping all over the U.S. And I think those are the types of things that are going to stick around after we're, back to normal, whatever that is. And I just hope that, other businesses can see those lessons learned and maybe consider how to be flexible because, things like this can happen all the time.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.